Chapter 1. Hike Your Own Hike. Standing on top of Mount Katahdin, the start of my Appalachian Trail adventure, I strained to see Springer Mountain, 2,168 miles away in Georgia. Of course, I was kidding myself, but I tried anyway. I couldn't fathom walking across the entire Appalachian mountain range to get there. It sure would be easier to just take Greyhound. It was June 26. There was not a cloud in the sky, scarcely a breeze, and the temperature was warm. There was so little wind on Katahdin's summit that there were several bugs flying about. This is almost unheard of, and a stark contrast with what most northbound thru hikers experience when they reach the end of their journey. Northbounders, as we call them, or more simply, Nobos, leave Georgia in March or April and typically arrive in Maine in late September or early October. At that time of year, the temperatures are below freezing on Katahdin, and ominous clouds usually obscure the spectacular view. Even the lucky ones, who have a clear day, cannot linger long at the top because strong cold winds chill you to the bone. On the other hand, southbounders, or Sobos, don't end their journey in a tropical paradise either. Before they reach Georgia in November or December, Sobos usually get hammered with frosty weather too. However, while I was standing on the tallest mountain in Maine, I wasn't worried about the weather conditions I would face at the end of my pilgrimage. I assumed I would simply walk hard, get to Georgia in October, and avoid the lousy weather. Little did I know that the AT had other plans. Nevertheless, on that day, the perfect conditions on Katahdin let me easily see over 50 miles in every direction. I suddenly realized that even if I could walk to the furthest point I could see, I would have only walked about 2% of the trail. I knew I needed some time to think, but this might be a bit much. In any case, I touched the magical trailhead, the northern terminus of the Appalachian Trail, took a deep breath, and started methodically walking south. John Muir, U.S. Naturalist, said, "Wherever we go in the mountains, we find more than we seek." Discovering the First Principle. I met my first Nobo on my second day on the trail. He was a bearded, disheveled man resting by a lake. His resolute eyes hinted that he had walked from Georgia. His intense odor confirmed it. He said that about six other Nobos had already completed their thru-hikes. They had all left snowy Georgia in January and slogged their way to Maine by the end of June. He asked, "So, how was Katahdin?" "Tough," I replied. "But it helps if you leave most of your gear at the ranger station. After all, you have to return to the station on the way back down, so you might as well carry only what you need for the hard climb." "No way," he said, shaking his head. "I've carried my pack and all my gear from Georgia, and you better believe I'm going to take it to the top of Katahdin." What a stubborn, impractical man, I thought. As if he had read my mind, he added, "Hey, you gotta hike your own hike." He hoisted his backpack, smiled, and took off. That statement puzzled me. In time, I would hear it over and over again. Clearly, this was a core belief of the AT pilgrims. What did it really mean, and did it have any implications for life off the trail? Hiking your own hike on the AT. Hike your own hike means that you should hike the trail in the manner that you enjoy and not the way somebody tells you to hike it. Although you should ponder the advice of others, ultimately, make your own decision and focus on having fun. For example, some thru-hikers love to walk 30 miles a day and finish in 3 months, while others prefer to walk 6 miles a day and take 12 months. Some prefer carrying 70 pounds. Others enjoy carrying less than 15. Some insist on eating at every possible restaurant along the way, while others contemplate the nutritional value of bugs crawling in the mud. Hike Your Own Hike also means that you can backpack in any direction you want. Most hiked north, a small fraction went south, and others flip-flopped. A flip-flopper might hike north from Georgia to Virginia, then flip up to Maine, and walk back down south to Virginia. In the end, flip-floppers cover the same 2,168 miles that the linear hikers did, but just in a different way. In many cases, hiking your own hike may mean quitting the hike. Over 80% of the hikers who intend to hike the entire 18-1 season quit. Some of them return the next seasons to complete the sections that they missed. Thus, they become section hikers. However, many who quit never return because the hike wasn't fun for them. After all, digging a hole in the dirt and squatting can get old after a while. W.C. Fields said, "If at first you don't succeed, try again. Then quit. There's no point in being a damn fool about it." Whether you quit after 20 miles or you go the entire distance, the AT teaches you the same lesson. Hike your own hike. All the hikers focused on having fun. Consider what Bramble and Bushwack, a married couple, wrote at the end of their 2001 AT hike.
"Some things you just can't escape, but this trip was a chance to do something few people get to do. We got away from many of the hassles and aggravations of normal life, and it was so nice. Life on the trail was much simpler, more spontaneous, and a wonderful time for introspection. And our marriage survived. Not that we didn't have our moments, but it was nice to actually spend some real time together. The good times outweighed the bad 100-1. Trail names. Nearly every thru-hiker assumes a trail name that she either invents or another hiker gives her. Some adopt verbs as their trail names, such as Swift or Strider. One couple chose the names Slow and Steady. Some name themselves after animals, such as Bear, Wolf, or Tortoise. Finally, some just have whimsical names such as Tollbooth Willie, Bloody Stumps, Doodlebug, Crispy Critter, and Happy Feet. Trail names usually have a story behind it. For instance, in New Hampshire, a thru-hiker named Blood gave me my trail name. He anointed me Cartwheel because my pack was so light that he thought I should be doing cartwheels up the mountains. Before Francis set off on the AT, his friends named him Mr. Magoo due to his usual amount of dumb luck. Thru-hikers adopt trail names to symbolically shed their identity and adopt a new one for the trail. This represents the transformative power of a thru-hike.
Hiking your own hike off the AT. Although the AT's basic credo worked for thru-hikers, I wasn't sure if it applied to life off the trail. However, after enough backpacking and deep thinking, I soon realized that it did. In fact, the pilgrims applied the hike your own hike belief before and after their journey. For example, Aloha Ann describes how the AT created an inflection point in her life. She finally summoned the courage to hike her own hike.
Aloha Ann wrote in her journal on November 6, 2000 in Camp Smith, Hawaii.
"What is this?"
my boss demanded. "Without looking at it, I would guess that it's my resignation," I replied.
"What do you mean you're quitting?"
"I mean that I'm not going to work here much longer."
"Who do you have a job with?"
"I don't have a job with anyone."
"Of course you do. No one quits without a job waiting."
"Oh, well, I guess you just met the first person that did."
"That's ridiculous. Where are you going?"
"For a walk."
"A walk?"
"Yeah, a walk." April 1st, 2001, Fredericksburg, Virginia. That was my conversation with my employer the day I turned in my resignation. 11 years on the job, 21 years with the government, and I was going for a walk. It does sound crazy, doesn't it? What person in their right mind walks away from a good job, a decent retirement, and moves from a state that they truly love to go for a walk? No one in his or her right mind for sure. But then again, what person remains in a job where they're unfulfilled, bored, frustrated, and truly dislikes being there? No one in his or her right mind, for sure. Upon finding out about my plans, friends, family, and co-workers all asked that simple question, why? They're still asking it. Not why I quit my job or moved, but why am I going to attempt to walk across 14 states and 2,168 miles? That's a hard question to answer. It's only hard because the answer is, because I want to and I can. Again, that's not looking very stable, is it? But it's the truth. One day, a couple of years back, I looked up only to find that I had been drawn into a Dilbert cartoon. I was sedately enmeshed in a job that I had limited to no interest in, working in a Dilbert-type cubicle with coworkers that seemed to be unfulfilled and frustrated. However did this happen? Boredom ruled. It was obvious I needed a change. I needed a big change, and I needed it soon.
Aloha Ann realized that she was not enjoying the hike she was on, her job, and that she could not afford to put off enjoying it any longer. She decided to create an inflection point in her life. The first step on her new hike was the AT. Thru-hikers don't blindly do what people tell them to do. They do what they know gives them pleasure. Those who just do what society expects them to do, thereby ignoring their inner voice, are missing the point of life. A pilgrim's purpose is to enjoy life now and not put it off for retirement. Kurt Vonnegut said, "We are here on Earth to fart around. Don't let anyone tell you any different." Many agree that the purpose of life is to enjoy it and will shout, "And it took you walking 2,168 miles to figure that out? Come on, I figured that out this morning when I was doing the laundry." Yet for all those who agree, there are so few who fully enjoy it. Therefore, the challenge isn't understanding the concept, it's executing it. Are you hiking your own hike? The rest of this book will go into the how of hiking your own hike. But for now, let's figure out 1, if you're enjoying life, 2, when to take action if you're not enjoying life, and 3, what it will take for you to enjoy life. Let's start with 1. Are you enjoying life? Some people know the answer immediately. For others, it's less clear, and they should take a quick quiz. Just answer these questions with a simple yes or no, and keep track of how many times you say yes. Here are 10 questions. First, when you wake up in the morning, do you look forward to the new day? 2, do you love your job? 3, would most people who know you well describe you as a happy person? 4. Do you smile more often than you frown? 5. Can you look back at the last 12 months and say that you have no major regrets? 6. Do you feel like you have everything you need to be truly happy? 7. When you look at yourself in the mirror, do you feel good? 8. Would most people say that you're a giving and generous person? 9. Can you easily brush off the small irritations in life? 10. Do you go to bed eager to get up the next day? Okay, now how did you do? Add up how many times you said yes. If you said yes 7 times or less, you need to make some changes to create an inflection point and start squeezing the most out of life. The rest of this book will show you how. If you said yes to every question, to all 10 questions, then go easy on the Prozac. When should you take action if you're not enjoying yourself? You might expect me to say immediately, but that would be foolish. Ideally, you should make every moment enjoyable. Don't sacrifice 4 years of your life to go to medical school if you don't enjoy school. Don't spend years in a lousy relationship. Don't hike the AT for 6 months if you can't handle eating the same unappealing, dehydrated food every day. On the other hand, you can take this argument to an extreme. For example, someone might argue that she didn't enjoy medical school for the past 2 days, so she's dropping out. Another might say that his wife was being difficult last week, so he's filing for divorce. Clearly, these reactions are a bit extreme, but it raises the issue. When you're down, when do you say enough is enough? I contemplated this over Maine's Sugarloaf Mountain, where, sadly, there were no sugar loaves. Major trails versus minor trails. The first step you should take is to separate major trails from minor trails. A major trail, like the Appalachian Trail, is a long-term activity, such as a marriage, a job, or a home. It's a situation that usually lasts for years. A minor trail, like a section on the AT, is a short-term activity, such as a night on the town, a football game, a trade show, a concert, a vacation, a picnic, a class, or a meeting with your mother-in-law. Major trails. Major trails are more important than minor trails, so let's deal with them first. Here's the rule of thumb you should use on major trails. If you're generally not enjoying a major trail for over 4 months, then create an inflection point by getting out of or changing that situation immediately so you can enjoy life again. Although it's not a perfect rule, it helps remind you that A, you're going to have to put up with some bad times occasionally, and B, that you should not put up with them for long. For instance, it's not a big deal if you've had a bad day at work every couple of weeks, but if you've been miserable at your job almost every day for more than 6 months, you need change. Yes, you need the income because you have bills to pay, but don't succumb to frog psychology.
Frog psychology. Scientists inadvertently learned something about frog psychology when they conducted two experiments. In the first experiment, they threw a frog into a pot of boiling water, and it immediately jumped out. In the second experiment, they put the frog into a pot of cold water, and then slowly began to raise the temperature. As the temperature went up, the frog showed discomfort, but stayed in the pot. Eventually, the water hit a rolling boil. The frog never moved and died a horrible death. Are you suffering from frog psychology? Lousy major trails are sneaky because they usually don't get that way overnight. Instead, the process can be a slow and steady decline. And like the frog, before you know it, you're dead. Get out of that boiling water now.
Instead, create an inflection point. How? First, look around your company to see if there are any other jobs that you would prefer to do. Talk with your boss or human resources to see what they can do to transition you into the new position. Perhaps you need some more training, but many companies will provide it. They have already invested in you, so they would rather keep you happy because happy employees are more effective than disgruntled ones. Just ask Homer Simpson. If nothing works, then immediately start looking for a job elsewhere as discussed in Chapter 3. One of the most challenging major trails is a declining relationship. Frog psychology easily sets in when you've been with someone for a long time. After the initial honeymoon period, couples revert to their normal behavior patterns. In many cases, couples' patterns are not compatible over the long haul. Nevertheless, couples have a tendency to become complacent with the moribund situation. Instead, they should either A, create an inflection point and repair or radically improve their relationship, or B, break up. Those are the only two intelligent options. Most don't take either action because they, like the frog in the steadily warming pot, suffer from inertia. Isaac Newton described inertia. Matter stays at rest or continues going in the direction it was traveling unless another force is applied. Although Newton's principle of inertia focused on the physical realm, the same is true for the spiritual realm. Your relationship will continue going the way it's going unless you exert a force against it. Inflection points happen because a force is applied. They don't happen on their own. The effort to make a change may seem monumental, for who likes rocking the boat? However, you must realize that unless something changes, you will find it difficult to enjoy the relationship. And remember, unless you're Hugh Hefner, the dating scene only gets worse with age. As one man said, 99% of men give the other 1% a bad name. The reason you must limit miserable major trails to 4 months is that it allows for the normal up and downs of life, but it compels you to reject extended down periods. By setting a limit of 4 months, you force yourself to put together a plan of getting out of it. Perhaps you can make your own rule as short as 2 months, or as long as 6, but be strict about it. The most common excuse for not acting on a declining major trail is that we think we're experiencing unusual circumstances. Oh, my husband has been having a few tough months at work. Or, her uncle died 3 years ago and she's still coping. Or, he accidentally flushed his rubber ducky down the toilet. However, bad news happens to all of us. Yes, some get it more than others, but there's always an excuse to be miserable if you're looking for one. If morose people are in a good situation, then they look back to their childhood to find something that didn't go quite right there and then get depressed about that. At some point, you have to realize that you can't change the past and that you only have two choices. A. Continue to feel sorry for yourself. B. Get over it and move on. Most people get over it, but some take more time than others. Chapter 7 discusses techniques on how to quickly get over misfortune and move on. For now, realize that you can either get over it today, or you can get over it in 2 months or 2 years. Take your pick. Dale Carnegie said, "Any fool can criticize, condemn, and complain. And most fools do." As people age, there's a tendency to become complacent. Children, for example, are always experimenting and look at the world with eyes of wonder and fascination. Adults, on the other hand, can get stuck in a tedious routine and accept it. You must commit to getting out of your rut and onto the ridge. If you don't want to make this pact with yourself, don't worry. Even grumpy old men find something to be happy about a couple of times a year. Minor trails. A good rule of thumb for dealing with unpleasant minor trails is this. If you're not enjoying a particular minor trail, get out of it immediately if the repercussions are insignificant. For example, if you're not enjoying a movie, then don't just keep watching it if it's not getting any better. Just discreetly leave. If you're watching it at home, it's easy to hit the off switch. Besides, maybe something more interesting is on TV, like Jerry Springer. On the other hand, if the repercussions of escaping an unpleasant minor trail are significant, then tough it out. After all, minor trails pass quickly. The most common type of negative minor trail that is worth putting up with is one's investment for the future. Examples abound. Studying hard for a class you hate in order to get good grades you need to get into a good graduate school or get a good job. Doing an undesirable project for work may be worth it to make your boss happy and get a promotion at a company you normally enjoy working for. Watching an uninteresting sports event with your boyfriend in order to keep your relationship healthy. Walking 20 miles on the AT, even though you're tired because you want to make it to the post office before it closes for the weekend. Doing the laundry so you can have clean underwear tomorrow. Whenever you feel yourself in a dreadful minor trail, ask yourself, what would probably happen if I got myself out of this situation? Then figure out if you can live with the outcome. In so doing, you will identify if this minor trail is connected to a larger goal that you are pursuing. And if it isn't, then run away like a thru-hiker being pursued by a gang of mosquitoes.
Miserable minor trails on the AT. Most people find the AT thru-hike to be a miserable major trail. That's why over 80% don't finish it. Those who do finish it will tell you that it was a wonderful major trail and it was filled with a variety of awful minor trails. Here are just a few trying minor trails that we experienced. Being so dehydrated that we had to drink water with floaties in it. Getting rained on for 4 days straight. Walking 20 miles with blisters. Living without a shower for 5 days during a humid heat wave. Eating uncooked oatmeal. And sleeping on the grass near a venomous snake. We couldn't get out of these minor trails without jeopardizing our hike. We had to press on. Had we taken a day off each time things got uncomfortable, a snowy winter would have halted our expedition. Yet despite all those arduous situations, hiking the AT was one of the most magnificent major trails I have ever experienced. As Cummer, a 64-year-old thru-hiker, put it, "It was the hardest thing we have ever tried, but the most enjoyable and rewarding. It's strange, but sometimes the best major trails are littered with lousy minor trails. If you don't believe me, just watch Behind the Music on VH1.
Follow the fun compass. When in doubt, let the fun compass guide you. The fun compass tells you which direction is the most fun. We all carry a fun compass, but many of us ignore it. We settle for having a few enjoyable moments. Make a habit of frequently asking, am I having fun? Am I enjoying this activity? If not, 1, look at the fun compass. 2, identify if it's a major or minor trail. And 3, take the appropriate action. Don't linger in tedious situations. Get out of them as soon as possible. Few people go overboard with enjoying life. Most people put up with more hardship than they need to. What does it take to enjoy life? If your hike is not fun, then you need to figure out what has to happen for you to enjoy your hike. There are many things that people think they need to be happy and enjoy life. Go through this exercise.
Write a list of things that have to happen or you need to acquire for you to enjoy life. If you are already enjoying life, then write down how much you could afford to lose before you would no longer enjoy life. In other words, how many things could someone take away from you until you are no longer happy?
You might have mentioned that you need a comfortable amount of money, a good education, personal freedom, equality, favorable social status, health, and other factors. Even though you probably didn't mention all these, several might have made the list. Take a step back. Now look at that list you just wrote and really ask yourself, are you paring it down to the minimum? When I was in El Salvador, I met a woman who had a tiny, dirty store in a humble pueblo called Suchitoto. This small Central American country has experienced nothing but misery for over 30 years. Yet this woman, who lived so modestly, was incredibly positive and happy. She was enjoying life despite having so little. She knew what was going on around the world and how others lived. She had been to the United States. She was happy in her place despite the erratic electricity and the poverty. She wisely realized that she did not need a $1,000 Aeron chair to feel good about life. Her wooden stool worked just great. Similarly, thru-hikers were perfectly content to eat their meals just sitting in the mud. Aristotle said, "Happiness depends upon ourselves." In a broad survey, two psychologists found that only 30% of those surveyed were very happy. What was fascinating is that the percentage of those who said that they were very happy or fairly satisfied with life was the same whether the person was black, white, Hispanic, Asian, male, or female. Even more telling was that the percentages stayed the same over 4 decades of economic growth. In 1957, having a car was still somewhat of a luxury. Today, in America, cars outnumber drivers. Compared to 1957, we now have microwave ovens, color TVs, TiVo, air conditioners, answering machines, cell phones, and spam both in a can and on our computers. So are we happier than we were in 1957? Not according to the survey. Still not convinced that you control your happiness? Consider that a year after winning the lottery, most winners are no happier than they were before.
Simple pleasures deliver a big impact. Hiking your own hike or following your fun compass can have profound health benefits. Consider, a study showed that patients listening to Brahms in the operating room needed only half the sedative as those who listened to nothing. Looking at an aquarium lowered the blood pressure of patients suffering from hypertension. German research discovered that students who took daily saunas had less than half as many colds over 6 months as a group that did not take the saunas. Venturing outside can relieve depression. Research demonstrated that patients who were recuperating from a gallbladder operation got out of the hospital 1 day earlier, had fewer complications, and needed fewer pain relievers when they were given a room with a view of trees rather than a brick wall. Or, you can study somebody's heart rate by just touching them. Therefore, improve your health by simply hiking your own hike and following your fun compass.
Millions of Americans who have one of the highest standards of living in the world are not as happy as a poor woman in El Salvador. What's wrong? How to compare yourself with others. When someone asks, "Are you happy?" we tend to look around at our peers and see how they are living. If we're better off than our peers, it's likely that we decide to be happy. Therefore, one of the tricks of being happy is to change the group we compare ourselves to. Silicon Valley gossip columns enjoy pointing out that Oracle's software titan, Larry Ellison, whose $14 billion net worth makes him one of the top 10 richest people in America, is not the happiest guy around, mainly because he always compares himself to Bill Gates. Meanwhile, back on the AT, some thru-hikers would feel smug because they got a spot in a shelter, which only has three walls and frequently has rodents nearby, whereas the latecomers had to set up their tent in the rain. For some reason, most thru-hikers coveted the spots in the shelters and preferred cramming next to snoring neighbors than setting up their tent. I suppose if we put Larry Ellison on the AT, he might feel better about himself if we somehow made sure that he always got to stay in one of the shelters. And of course, Bill Gates had to sleep outside under a shoddy tarp. Alexander Pope said on his essay on man, "Oh, happiness, our being's end and aim." Imagine I walk into a shelter and give you and your four friends an envelope. You open yours, and it says that you get a free pizza in the next town. If you're like most thru-hikers, you'd do a somersault with your backpack on. Clearly, you would be ecstatic. Most thru-hikers value fresh food more than anything on the trail. Indeed, you might think that thru-hikers spend most of their time thinking deep thoughts during the long days hiking in the wilderness. You might imagine that they are gathering the wisdom off every branch and every stream. On the contrary, most spend their time fantasizing about grilled cheese sandwiches, fries, shakes, and ice cream. Therefore, if I were to ask you if you were happy about getting a free pizza, you would shout emphatically, "Yes, woohoo!" But now imagine that your friends finish opening their envelopes, and not only do they get a free pizza, but they get to stay at the Ritz-Carlton, have a foot and back massage, stay in the deluxe suite with a jacuzzi, and have all their laundry done for them. Now, all of a sudden, you don't feel so good anymore. You went from a state of exhilaration to one of melancholy. From a purely rational perspective, if you were happy before, you should still be happy now. After all, you still get your free pizza, and that's what got you excited in the first place. I didn't take that away from you, so you should still be happy. However, when we're trying to decide how happy we are, we tend to look at how other people are doing to help us make that decision. This is natural, and it's hard to fight this primal tendency. Ambrose Bierce defined happiness as an agreeable sensation arising from contemplating the misery of others.
Use the urge to compare yourself with others in a positive way. Instead of trying to stop comparing yourself to anyone, just change whom you compare yourself to. If you want to instantly make yourself feel depressed, think of all the people who have much better lives than you. Conversely, if you want to make yourself instantly feel happy, compare your state to those less fortunate than you. Moreover, don't just compare yourself with those less fortunate than you. Take it a step further. Compare yourself with people who are less fortunate than you and who are happier than you. It is at that moment that you will realize that you have no excuse. It's all in your head. What else can explain why so many thru-hikers who effectively live like bums in absolute squalor are happy and fulfilled? Chinese proverb, "One who is content with what one has is always happy." The implication of this Chinese proverb is that the fewer desires you have, the easier it will be to satisfy them and be happy. Confucius reinforced this philosophy when he praised his favorite disciple, Yan Hui. He said, "A bowl full of rice to eat, a gourd full of water to drink, and living in a mean dwelling. All this hardship others would find intolerable, but Hui does not allow this to affect his joy. How admirable Hui is! Clearly, this is proof that Confucius would have admired thru-hikers. Then again, it could also be used to prove that he would have respected participants in the TV show Survivor. Abraham Lincoln said, "Most folks are about as happy as they make up their minds to be." Next time you feel like you're being shortchanged on something, compare yourself with the following. Wealth. We've all met plenty of poor people who are happy. In case you haven't, just ask yourself if Gandhi or Mother Teresa were happy. Education. You don't need to have access to encyclopedic knowledge or a PhD to be happy. There is a reason that we say ignorance is bliss. There are tribes in the world, such as the Aborigines, that have little access to the internet, TV, newspapers, books, and other sources of knowledge. Are they despondent? Personal freedom. In every repressive regime, there have been plenty of happy people. The Diary of Anne Frank demonstrates how a Jewish family in Nazi Germany enjoyed the simple moments of life, even under the most confining of conditions. Equality. South Africa's racist laws were extremely unequal, yet many of its citizens did not let that be an excuse for being miserable and oppressed. Health. Stephen Hawking, the famous theoretical physicist, seems to enjoy every day of his life despite being confined to a wheelchair and having ALS. Magic Johnson still maintains his ever-present smile, even though he is HIV positive. Lance Armstrong kept a positive spirit in the face of cancer. Social position. Order takers at McDonald's aren't the pinnacle of the social ladder, but try to find an unhappy one among those who were selected to represent McDonald's in the Utah's 2002 Olympic Games. McDonald's picked their most service-oriented employees from all over the world and flew them in for that world event. Life events. Some of us get big lucky breaks, like winning the lottery. Others get big unlucky breaks, like getting paralyzed from a car accident. However, just like there are unhappy millionaires, there are plenty of happy paraplegics. A tragedy does not force you to be unhappy for the rest of your life. I'm not suggesting that you learn to be happy living a monastic life, nor am I saying that people who live in challenging situations have no right to complain or to try to improve their situation. I'm simply suggesting that it is possible to enjoy life without all the things that we typically think of as basic requirements. Too many people think, "I'll be able to start enjoying life once I get blank." Don't put it off for tomorrow or next month, even though there is some correlation between having the above things and enjoying life. They are not necessary to enjoy life. Just ask anyone who thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail. As Dale Carnegie said, happiness doesn't depend on outward conditions. It depends on inner conditions. Common criticisms. A few might disagree with the hike your own hike philosophy. After all, declaring that we should follow our fun compass seems hedonistic. It seems to forget morals. What about helping others? Or bettering yourself? Or raising a family? Does that mean we shouldn't feel guilty for stealing a hotel's towels? In short, it may seem like an irresponsible credo. To indulge the skeptics among us, let's think about it. But what about morals? Being moral and enjoying life are not mutually exclusive. Follow your friend compass does not give you the right to be immoral or unethical. Just because you didn't get a raise doesn't give you the right to go postal. What about self-sacrifice? At Amherst College, I majored in religion and studied a variety of faiths. The Bible and other religious texts frequently portray sinners as pleasure seekers. This leads some to conclude that a good moral life must be the opposite. But is that true? Did God punish Moses for smiling when he saw the land of Canaan? Did Muhammad not enjoy reflecting in a cave on Mount Hira? Did the Buddha not take pleasure in his walks through the wilderness? Does God frown on Christians who enjoy singing? Did Confucius not extol his followers to pursue happiness in this life? Religions aren't about making you miserable. They're about loving God, loving life, and being a good person. As Benjamin Franklin said, beer is proof that God loves us and wants us to be happy.
Morals on the trail. Many people fear the AT. Don't you carry a gun, they ask? Aren't you afraid some crazy person might attack you in the middle of nowhere? I tell them that I have those thoughts when I'm walking on the streets of a major city, not when I'm in the woods. A married couple that call themselves Bear and Honey run a hostel for hikers in Andover, Maine. Bear told me that for over 10 years, he has left his wallet lying around the hostel, and even though hundreds of hikers have come through, no one has ever stolen any money from it. In fact, he gives his truck's keys to any hiker who needs to run an errand in town. He's never had a bad incident. The AT's moral code is remarkable.
Thru-hikers are akin to religious disciples. They suffer tremendously at times, but overall they enjoy the experience. Their purpose isn't to suffer, but to be happy and fulfilled. Sure, it's tough backpacking the entire AT in one season. We would walk from sunrise to sunset and over steep mountains with a pack on our backs. We would walk over 20 miles a day in the rain and the mud with the entourage of mosquitoes whining in our ears. We had to ignore our dehydrated throats and our ravenous stomachs. As one successful thru-hiker and retired Lutheran pastor named George Zickenfuss told me, "There's no amount of money that you could pay me to work that hard." Yet, George did it for free. In fact, a couple of years later, while in his late 60s, he attempted to hike the AT again. Incredibly, George has only one lung. Clearly, this was hard work, but he enjoyed it. This former pastor did it because he knew that accomplishing his goal would make him so happy that it would make it all worthwhile. If nothing else, at least it got him out of the house. One of Buddhism's central beliefs is that much of life is about suffering, but Buddhist monks are taught to transcend the suffering. In conclusion, the most deeply religious people are the most likely to understand that the purpose of life is to enjoy it. It's no coincidence that the Dalai Lama himself wrote a book entitled The Art of Happiness, A Handbook for Living, where the first sentence is, "I believe that the very purpose of life is to seek happiness. That is clear." But what about dreams? Confucius advises us to have few desires, but what about having big dreams? Isn't it important to dream ambitious dreams if we ever want to accomplish anything in life? If you don't want anything, doesn't that mean you won't achieve anything? Dreaming and having big goals is extremely important. The key is not making your happiness dependent on achieving those dreams. For example, before starting the AT, most thru-hikers imagine finishing it. It's important to visualize it, but at the same time, don't tell yourself that you won't be happy unless you achieve it. No matter how much we dream and plan, things don't always turn out the way we expect. Have simple enough expectations that nearly anything will make you happy. Set up various scenarios in your mind and imagine being happy with all of them. Just have one ideal scenario that keeps you motivated. For instance, completing the hike without getting mauled by a bear. The famous Hollywood actor David Niven said, "I've been lucky enough to win an Oscar, write a bestseller. My other dream would be to have a painting in the Louvre. The only way that's going to happen is if I paint a dirty one on the wall of the gentleman's laboratory." Summary. Let's recap some of the important points of this chapter. Aim to make every waking moment enjoyable by following your fun compass. 2. When life is not enjoyable, use the major trail versus minor trail analysis to help you decide what to do. 3. Identify when you're succumbing to frog psychology and quickly create an inflection point to overcome it. 4. When you feel unhappy, stop comparing yourself to those more fortunate than you and start comparing yourself to those less fortunate and happier than you. And finally, realize that it takes far less than you think to enjoy life. I'm reminded of my feelings when we crossed the state line of Maine into New Hampshire. We turned around to read the sign. "Welcome to Maine, the way life should be," it said. Lisa and I looked at each other and burst out laughing. Maine was some of the hardest hiking we had ever done in our lives. In preparation for the AT, we had hiked over 500 miles of trail in rugged California, whose peaks make Maine's mountains look like molehills. We thought we were prepared. We were the cocky hikers, believing that we could easily conquer Maine's diminutive peaks. We learned the hard lesson that a mountain's height is one thing, but the way the trail goes up it is another. Whereas California's trails are nicely graded for pack animals and have plenty of switchbacks, we encountered only 2 switchbacks in the first 400 miles of trail. The folks in New Hampshire don't understand the concept of a switchback either. Mary Poppins, a northbounder, wrote in his trail journal,
"I'm in Maine. I've been walking to Maine, and now I'm here. I had butterflies in my stomach all morning about the sign and the trail ending, etc., but after I got over it and started slipping on wet rocks and falling down and cursing and loving Maine, and, well, I'm here."
We were relieved to have finished the first 284 miles in Maine in less than 2 weeks. Our pace was grueling, but we did it because we enjoyed pushing ourselves. We knew that Maine was the toughest state on the AT. Therefore, we knew that if we could get through Maine, there wasn't a state on the AT that we couldn't do. It's a similar case here. Once you truly grasp the concept of hiking your own hike, then all else follows easily. The key is not simply to say, yeah, hike your own hike. Okay, so what's your next point? First, you must truly want to change your perspective and habits. Second, you must let the notion permeate all levels of your life. Commit to following your fun compass so you can hike your own hike. We've taken the first step on this epic journey by learning the most important principle to getting the most out of life. However, if you disagree with this principle, perhaps you might prefer the wisdom of Groucho Marx, who said, "The secret to life is honesty and fair dealing. If you can fake all that, you've got it made."